This is a podcast about the manosphere, so it may contain references to extremist misogyny and violence, and it will definitely contain lots of swears.
Hello and welcome to Manosphere Debunked, the podcast where, well, we debunk the manosphere. But today, however, there shall be no debunking per se, as today's episode is a follow-on from a solo episode that Aileen did about 2 weeks ago. In that episode, if you've not listened to it yet, Aileen essentially discussed the bridge between the rhetoric of the manosphere and the way it has seeped into mainstream media, such as popular podcasts and the influence of social media personalities. The episode was prompted by the tragic incidents that took place in Australia on April 13th, just over 2 weeks ago, where a man entered a shopping centre and killed six people. Among the victims were five women and one man who was trying to intervene. It has been reported that an additional 12 victims, mostly women, and including a nine-month-old baby, were hospitalized during the attack. The context of kind of why Aileen and I were having this discussion, or why Aileen started having this discussion, was that many people online believed that the attacker was either a Muslim or a Jewish man. However, the police later identified that the suspected killer was actually a white Christian man and an Australian national who was also killed in the attack. So an officer, when he was going to attack her, took his life. Unfortunately, the initial speculations about the attacker's identity created anti-Muslim hatred. However, once it was discovered that the attacker was in fact a white man, the narrative then changed to focus more on the attacker's mental health difficulties and the fact that he was a rough sleeper or of the homeless community. So, following on from that, Aileen had this to say in her podcast.
So this happened in Sydney. And yes, the discourse began. There have been articles about how it is fueled by misogyny. It seems pretty obvious that he was targeting women. Police are still sort of reluctant to say anything. And I understand that. And I think police, I have lots of problems with police investigations and police's action in terms of misogyny, certainly, and violence against women and girls. But when there's an ongoing investigation, I understand that police can't necessarily say lots of things. But one thing they did say is there's still, to this point, no information we've received, no evidence we have recovered, no intelligence that we have gathered that would suggest that this was driven by a particular motivation, ideology, or otherwise. The fact that he's killing, going for women, the only man who died was someone who stepped in, seems to me to be evidence of an ideology. But we don't see misogyny as an ideology because we would then have to be alarmed at how prevalent it is every fucking where in the world.
Now, Aileen is not the only one to have said something like this or something similar. A simple Google search will reveal that in 2021 in Plymouth, a man went on a shooting rampage in the Keyham area of Plymouth, killing five victims, including his mother, a three-year-old girl, and her father, as well as a 59-year-old man and a 66-year-old woman. He then took his own life. Of this attack, Joan Smith wrote for The Guardian, "We now know that the 22-year-old man was a misogynist. There are parallels between Plymouth and the Sandy Hook massacre in Connecticut in 2012, when an assailant shot his mother five times before going to a primary school where he killed 20 children and six adults, all women. Not for the first time, the significance of extreme misogyny in the genesis of a fatal attack on members of the public seems to have been missed." According to another article, the Plymouth attacker left hate-filled posts on Reddit forums for incels and also identified himself as an incel. In addition to this, Laura Bates, author of Everyday Sexism and Men Who Hate Women, and, you know, Aileen and I are huge, massive fans of Laura Bates, was quoted in an independent article just 2 days after the 2021 Plymouth attack saying, "If someone had been clearly radicalized online and then committed a massacre against a particular group of people, it's interesting to consider the difference in terminology we might be using to describe them." And so, referring back to the incident in Australia, in an article 3 days after the attack, published by The Refinery, author Crystal Andrews notes in the article that the police did not consider the attacks to be ideologically motivated, according to the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Karen Webb. The article goes on further to say that investigators did not suspect that the perpetrator held any particular beliefs, hence it was not considered a terrorism incident. However, the article, written by Andrews, does raise the broader question for Australians, including whether misogyny should be treated as an ideology when it comes to crime and how it would affect the way authorities tackle violence against women in the country. So, at this point, it's probably worth looking at how terrorism is defined. Here in the UK, according to the Terrorism Act of 2000, terrorism is defined as the use or threat of action where the use or threat of the action is designed to influence the government or an international governmental organization, or to intimidate the public or a section of the public. And the use or threat is made for the purpose of advancing a political, religious, racial, or ideological cause. These actions used can involve serious violence against a person, involve serious damage to property, endanger a person's life other than that of the person committing the action, create a serious risk to health or safety of the public or a section of the public, or is designed seriously to interfere with or seriously to disrupt an electronic system. And so, going back to the article that was written by Joan Smith after the Plymouth attacks, she further wrote that it is hard to see how the Plymouth attackers' actions failed to meet the government's definition of terrorism, which, as we've just noted, includes the use of threat or action to intimidate the public. Examples include serious violence against one or more people, endangering somebody's life, or creating a serious risk to health and safety of the public. Tick, tick, tick. But here is the get-out clause. The definition stipulates that terrorism must be for the purpose of advancing a political, religious, racial, or ideological cause, and it is often argued that the most extreme misogyny does not meet that test. So, for clarity, in this podcast, we're going to have a look at what makes an ideology, some examples of existing ideologies, and how misogyny might fit into that definition. Now, in a 2022 journal article entitled Psychology of Ideology, Unpacking the Psychological Structure of Ideological Thinking, author Leo Szmigrod, I hope I've got that name right, writes that political theorists, sociologists, and psychologists have espoused, at times radically, different conceptualizations of ideology. But he goes on further to say that, as a starting point, most contemporary definitions of ideology have recognized that an ideology functions as a force that epistemically organizes beliefs around how society ought to be structured and how people ought to behave. So, full disclosure, I had to look up the word epistemically, and it means relating to knowledge or the study of knowledge. So what I've taken that to mean is that an ideology provides a way to organize knowledge or how we understand certain things, so the way of the world, in a way to structure society and to kind of think about and guide how we behave. The journal article further goes on to say that an ideology provides both an interpretation of the environment and a prescription as to how that environment should be structured. A simpler definition is provided by the good old Cambridge Dictionary, which states that an ideology is a set of beliefs or principles, especially one on which a political system, party, or organization is based. And the reason I used both of those examples, or wanted to look at both of those examples, is that one talks about the idea of beliefs and principles in relation to political systems and organizations and things like that, whilst the other definition talks more broadly about how ideologies take what we know about the world and think about how it influences our society, but more specifically how we go on to behave, because my understanding of ideologies are that they're not just about beliefs, but it's also about how they shape our culture and societies, but more specifically also about how people will act and behave and interact with one another based on those particular ideological beliefs. And so from what I can tell, with the little bit of research that I've done, ideologies are broken down into categories as well as specific type of ideologies. So from a website called Philosophy Terms, I found a whole list of categories of ideologies. So you get political ideologies. So according to the website, it says these things are like the rules of a board game. So explaining how society should be put together and who should get to make the big decisions. So examples of this could include socialism, communism, along with liberalism and conservatism. There's also economic ideologies, in where money is talked about as a set of beliefs. So these ideologies look at who should get to keep the coins in their pocket and who decides on the price of a chocolate bar. And so other examples given again are things like capitalism and socialism. Then there are cultural ideologies. So these are, again, the definition given in this website is are like recipes passed down in a family, the special ways that we do things that make us who we are. They cover everything from the words that we use to the holidays that we celebrate to the sports that we play. Then there are religious ideologies. So the definition here, which is quite nice, it says, think of this as stories that you might tell around the campfire. They're about the bigger questions like why are we here and how should we treat others? So this is where it gets interesting in terms of this particular conversation, because another category of ideologies is that of social ideologies. And the definitions from the website goes on to say that these are like secret handshakes or rules of the playground. So it talks about feminism as an example, where at a very basic level, it says this is all about making sure that everyone, boys and girls, can swing on the swing set equally. It's a bit more than that, but sure. Whereas environmentalism, on the other hand, wants to make sure that the playground, which is Earth, is clean and safe for everyone. In looking into the definition of ideologies a bit more, I did find on Wikipedia that sociologists define ideology as cultural beliefs that justify particular social arrangements, including patterns of inequality. It goes on further to say that dominant groups use these sets of cultural beliefs and practices to justify the systems of inequality that maintain their group's social power over non-dominant groups. So even from that little bit from Wikipedia, I think we can start to think about and see how misogyny could be understood as an ideology. So in starting to think about how to unpick and talk about misogyny as an ideology, I went to good old Wikipedia and just read what it said there. So I'm just going to kind of read what it says, and then I'm going to take you a little bit down a rabbit hole that I found. So misogyny is defined as the hatred of, contempt for, or prejudice against women or girls. It is a form of sexism that can keep women at a lower social status than men, thus maintaining the social roles of patriarchy. Misogyny has been widely practiced for thousands of years. It is reflected in art, literature, human societal structure, historical events, mythology, philosophy, and religion worldwide. It goes on further to say, an example of misogyny is violence against women, which includes domestic violence and, in its most extreme forms, misogynist terrorism and femicide. If your ears perked up at that, don't worry, we're going to come back to this. The definition goes on to say, misogyny also operates through sexual harassment, coercion, and psychological techniques aimed at controlling women and by legally or socially excluding women from full citizenship. In some cases, misogyny rewards women for accepting an inferior status. Which I think is probably like the whole trad wives homesteady movement. And that's another discussion for another day. So even from this definition from Wikipedia, we can see that the two aspects of the broader definition of ideology that I mentioned earlier about how ideologies channel or organize knowledge into belief systems and then influence action or behavior. We can see that the way in which women are viewed and understand in comparison to men through the lens of misogyny then influences the beliefs that are held about women in a patriarchal society and then manifests in harmful, hurtful, dangerous behaviors towards women. And the thing that's interesting to note is that this is something that has been reflected in art and literature and historical events throughout the history of time, and yet we find ourselves in a position where misogyny and sexism and hostile sexism isn't necessarily considered ideological, I guess, for the purposes of thinking about acts of violence against women on a grand scale as terrorism. So I wanted to come back to a part of that Wikipedia definition and just read this back to you. An example of misogyny is violence against women, which includes domestic violence and, in its most extreme forms, misogynist terrorism and femicide. So when I read that, I did a bit of a double take because I was like, but in the media, when things that resemble terrorist attacks, but the motivation behind it isn't religious or racial, then the language of terrorism isn't necessarily used. So my question is, why in the Wikipedia definition or discussion about misogyny is the term then used? So I clicked on the various links for this Wikipedia definition and ended up going, like I said, down a bit of a rabbit hole. And a portion of that rabbit hole I'm going to share with you here. So when you click on the link of misogynist terrorism on Wikipedia, there is a section of the page that has this to say. Misogynist terrorism is terrorism that is motivated by the desire to punish women. It is an extreme form of misogyny. The article goes on further to say, and to talk about the acknowledgement of misogynist terrorism by saying, according to the International Center for Counterterrorism, so the ICCT at The Hague, counterterrorism experts were slow to recognize misogyny as an animating ideology for acts of mass violence in comparison to recognition of other ideologies. The National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Response to Terrorism, the acronym for that is START, and the Southern Poverty Law Center have tracked misogyny or male supremacy as a motivation for terrorism since 2018 and describe it as a rising threat. Alongside this, the Australian Security Intelligence Organization, bearing in mind that this attack that prompted these two podcast episodes by Aileen and myself occurred in Australia, the Australian Security Intelligence Organization considers misogynist violence among the fastest growing terrorism threats of 2021. So make of that what you will. But after clicking on several links, it appears that misogyny and male supremacy are closely linked ideologies. In fact, misogyny is often seen as a tool used to reinforce male supremacy. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, male supremacy is a hateful ideology based on the belief that cisgender men are inherently superior and have the right to dominate women, transgender men, and non-binary individuals. One of the main takeaways from the website is that male supremacists view women as genetically inferior, manipulative, and unintelligent. They often reduce women to their reproductive functions and shame them for having sex, while at the same time believing that sex is something women owe men or that should be coerced from them. Now, if you have listened to any other episodes of this podcast, you will find that all of those things that I have just read out quite familiar. So it appears that the ideologies of misogyny and male supremacy are interconnected and often coexist. They, in one sense, seem to be, you know, two sides of the same coin, or perhaps the same side of a one-sided coin. I'm not entirely sure that that is the best analogy, but we'll go with it. The thing that further blows my mind is this. So in March 2023, a human rights organization called Human Rights First published a fact sheet titled Extremism Fact Sheet, Male Supremacy and Misogyny. And the fact sheet highlights how misogyny is a significant driving factor behind gender-based violence, mass violence, and domestic extremism. It also states that almost half of all the perpetrators of mass violence have a history of domestic violence or misogynistic behaviors or both. And if you click the link about domestic extremism on this fact sheet, it takes you to another document that's also worth reading, and I'm going to read some stuff from it as well. So it seems then, as recently as January 2023, the US Department of Homeland Security published a document that is titled United States Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center, which focuses on mass attacks in public spaces that occurred in America, I'm going to assume, between 2016 and 2020. And according to the report, misogyny was identified as one of the factors that led to some of these attacks. The report further states that out of 175 attacks that occurred during this time period, at least 35 attacks, which accounts for 19% of the total attacks, displayed misogynistic behaviors prior to the attacks. These behaviors included calling women derogatory names, engaging in sexual harassment, and threatening sexual violence. If, like me, you're possibly a little bit confused because, on the one hand, it seems that when events occur in real time and there are indications that these attacks are linked to beliefs about women, hatred for women, or that women are understood to be targets of these attacks, the language used doesn't relate to extremist behavior or terrorism. And the beliefs that these individuals have about women and the kind of material that they see online or talk about isn't factored into the motivation behind the attacks, which leaves a gap for the ideological motivation in order to label it as an extremist or terrorist attack. However, as has just been discussed, there are obviously considerations and an understanding that misogyny and male supremacy can in fact, and does in fact, factor into a percentage of attacks, particularly in the US. Which kind of begs the question that if there is all this consideration and there is a realization, albeit a slow realization, that misogyny could be considered an ideology that underpins these widespread mass attacks or targeted attacks, why are the people who are tasked with investigating these particular attacks not aware of these considerations or not utilizing this information to inform how they talk about it both in the media but also to inform their line of inquiry? I mean, perhaps people don't associate misogyny with a political motivation, which is maybe kind of commonly linked to what an ideology is. However, terrorism is defined as having religious, racial, and ideological motivations. And as we've discussed throughout this podcast, and as has been demonstrated and has been considered by other organizations, misogyny can be considered an ideology that shapes an individual's worldview and the actions that they take. Therefore, it's worth considering why misogyny is not included as an ideology within the definition of terror attacks. It's possible that the decision makers lack the necessary information to make an informed decision, so it might be beneficial for them to listen to this podcast as an idea, as I've provided them with potential useful resources to go consider and read. As always, I will provide the links to everything I've discussed in the show notes, so if you're interested, you can go and have a read. Also, if you know of anyone who might benefit from this episode, please do let them know. We've essentially come to the end of the episode now, as I don't have much more to say. The kind of research on it drew to this natural conclusion. Hopefully the information I've shared has been helpful and illuminating. I must admit it was quite interesting for me to go through this research process and learn the things that I did. And so I hope that it was interesting for you too. As always, if you've enjoyed the episode, please share and rate it. And if you can, please leave a comment and do tell others. It really does help get the podcast out there. Additionally, if you want to join us at Patreon, you can. You can find us at patreon.com/manosphere debunked pod. And on that note, I wish you a good day. And next week, Aileen and I will be back with a double duo show like we normally do. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing her. It's been a while. So yeah, I will chat to you soon and see you later.